up on tech news today, Yelp's rolling out food delivery, Apple's testing out slow-mo video, and can we throw enough money at Tizen to make it attractive to developers? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, July 10th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by Umano, interesting content read to you by professional voice artists. Stay informed on the go. Umano is available for your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. Download it for free in the App Store or on Google Play. U-M-A-N-O. For more information, visit umanoapp.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date with all of the tech stories we find most valuable. Tom Merritt is on vacation this week, but let's get right into the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. U.S. District Judge Denise Coate in Manhattan has found compelling evidence that Apple violated federal antitrust law by playing a central role in a conspiracy with publishers to eliminate retail price competition and raise ebook prices. Apple was accused of pursuing this conspiracy to undercut Amazon's ebook dominance and causing prices to rise. Apple counters that the plaintiff's allegations are false, says it will appeal Coate's decision.
9 to 5 Mac says the S in the expected iPhone 5S could stand for slow motion. The site says Apple is working on a new camera hardware and that Apple's also designing a new iPhone feature called Mogul Mode that would capture 120 frames per second video. The resolution of that slow-mo video, though, is unknown.
Yelp is joining the on-demand food market by introducing a new delivery feature so consumers can browse for food and then order it as well. Yelp will partner with local delivery services so that customers don't have to actually leave Yelp to place orders. Yelp will take care of the entire ordering and checkout experience and process the payments.
Yelp, so you can gulp. It's over. Apple and Amazon's lawsuit over the term App Store is all finished. Who gets to use the mark? Well, both of them. Apple and Amazon came to an agreement not to sue each other over the use of the term. The lawsuit between the two was ordered to be dismissed, which would avoid a trial scheduled for August 19th.
In an effort to keep us all more private, because who doesn't want to be more private? Peter Sund, the co-founder of torrent network The Pirate Bay, is raising funds to create what he says will be a very secure mobile messaging app called Hemlis, H-E-M-L.is. It will use end-to-end encryption, so messages will only be accessible by the sender and that intended recipient. Messages will be encrypted with keys generated on the end user devices so that ISPs don't have access to anything in plain text.
Google just released Google Maps 7 for Android. Visually, there's lots of cards when you're not looking at maps. The app makes it easier to find things to do with an Explore feature. Engadget says the new Maps app is simpler, cleaner, and faster, and maps rendered noticeably quicker. Maps 7 requires Android 4.0.3 or higher.
If you utilize desktop Hangouts in Gmail, Google Plus, and via the Chrome extension, the team is giving you a new feature, well, one that they previously took away. You can now make calls from within Gmail again. Calls to the U.S. and Canada are now free from all countries where Hangouts calling is available. You can now also add multiple phone numbers and video participants to the same call. And you can play sound effects like applause or laughter with the Google Effects app.
Laugh track for your phone calls. Education technology company Coursera just raised $43 million to bring online education to emerging markets. Coursera says it's not trying to replace the college experience, but it's for people who want to learn about things without paying huge tuition costs. To date, Coursera has raised over $65 million in funding and has signed up more than 4 million students.
Iran has launched its own national email service, which requires all citizens to sign up to it to safely communicate with government officials. Prior to use, any account holder has to give out their local post office, full name, national ID number, and their postcode. Mohammad Nasin Nami, Iran's Minister for Information and Communication Tech, says all citizens will be assigned a national email address, but he doesn't say whether this would affect access to other email providers.
You know how U.S. sales of BlackBerry devices aren't amazing? Well, you know who else noticed that? BlackBerry. The company fired its head of U.S. sales, Richard Piacentin, back in June. BlackBerry reported that it had sold 2.7 million BlackBerry 10 devices. However, analysts expected BlackBerry to sell 3.7 million devices. So not so good.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle. If you want a new smartphone, you're eyeing the S4, the HTC One, or whatever that new iPhone's going to be, before you upgrade, make sure you sell your used phone or gadget to Gazelle so that you have cash to put towards what you actually really want, the latest and the greatest. You can find out what your gadget is worth at gazelle.com. Just go to G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. And look up your item. Type it in. Let Gazelle know the condition that your item's in. And if there are any nicks and scrapes, it's not a big deal because they even buy broken iPhones and iPads, stuff like that. Then Gazelle will give you an offer for your gadgets, which is risk-free and locked in for 30 days. So you got 30 days to get that gadget to Gazelle, and they'll honor the quote that they give you, provided that your gadget's in the condition you said it was. Then Gazelle pays you either by check, via PayPal, or with an Amazon gift card. You get an extra 5% on your total. Gazelle's also now buying back a larger selection of tablets. Hey, maybe that first tablet you decided to get just isn't the right tablet, but you're eyeing something better. Get that other gadget to Gazelle and get some money. Go to gazelle.com to get an offer for any gadget from Samsung, Apple, HTC, BlackBerry. Just go nuts. With Gazelle, you get paid in cash. Payment is fast. It is risk-free. And Gazelle will also wipe your data for free off of one of your devices. So don't worry about that either. Gazelle wants you to feel like they're doing the right thing. Trustworthy stuff. Gazelle has paid over $100 million to over 500,000 happy customers. Free shipping, too. What's your iPhone, Samsung, or other Android smartphone worth? Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com to find out. Again, sell your used Samsung Galaxy or iPhone today at gazelle.com. All right, joining us now to talk about the stories of the day that require a little bit more discussion is none other than co-host of All About Android, Ron Richards. Hey, Ron.
Thanks, Sarah. Good to be back.
Good to have you. Yes. And let's start off now with a lot of information that Dropbox, with their first ever Dropbox conference, I guess you'd call it, a day-long conference, has a very interesting new initiative. Dropbox says, people don't really think in terms of files and folders anymore, so we don't want to either. There's a couple new offerings from Dropbox that really are supposed to change the way that we share our data between devices and through the cloud. The chooser and the saver options. Now, the chooser is the first of a suite of features called drop-ins, which makes Dropbox the open and save windows in apps. So as a developer, you would actually build in these drop-ins. Chooser is only available for iOS, Android, web, and mobile web. Saver is only available for the web and mobile webs, but more platforms to follow. So for example, the Mailbox app, which was bought by Dropbox earlier this year, will now send attachments, and it's something that actually the native email app in iOS and the Gmail app in iOS don't actually do. You have a little paperclip icon at the bottom of the new message window, which opens a list of Dropbox files. So it's sort of like your, you know, your Google Cloud files or something that's local. Data stores is kind of cool as well. Developers can make their apps basically cross-platform. And you say, well, how would that work? Apps would write data about themselves into Dropbox from one device. And then data stores, which is one of these new Dropbox features, would read that data on another. So if, for example, you have a bunch of information about your weight and your, you know, body mass index and fitness stuff in a fitness tracking app, you could send that data to some sort of healthcare app and then have your doctor be able to pull that from the second app. So it's basically apps sharing data via Dropbox with each other and being able to open up an app on, let's say, an Android device that originated on in an iOS app, and it should play nicely. Now, this all sounds fine and good, but my first reaction was, well, Apple doesn't really want you to do that. And would really third-party apps want to rely so much on Dropbox to be able to get your data out of that initial app and read by another? Ron, what do you think?
Well, I think the data stores thing, you're right, that's a whole other issue. But moving back up to the chooser and the saver options for developers, as a developer who's currently working with an application that involves files that people download and save locally. Last week, my day job, we launched at Image Comics. We launched downloadable digital comics in PDF format and EPUB and things like that. And one of the questions we had were people using iOS devices, how could they download their comics from their device and read them from the device without a computer? And Apple, you know, we all know the iOS infrastructure doesn't really allow for save as and that sort of thing. This saver option seems like a great option to do that, to enable files to be saved somewhere in the cloud and accessible by other applications. I think that's great. I mean, and it's actually an evolution that Dropbox is taking that is less consumer focused and more developer focused. The data store side of things, though, that gets a little dicey. But really, when you look at it, if you look at some of the developer services that Google rolled out at I/O, how different is this? This is just another tool or another kind of cloud-based back-end data management thing that developers can use and not have to rely on Google.
The weird thing is a lot of people were hacking these features into Dropbox already by like syncing up like one password into there so you could have it on every computer. I've done it with my own apps. When I'm for Mac, I'll put an app in Dropbox and kind of get it. It kind of works on certain platforms. Sometimes it fails entirely, but it's this way to sync up everything. And I know I've switched computers or reformatted machines enough times that all I need to do really nowadays is set up Dropbox and everything else is there. If they have all these functions and developers take advantage of having their apps integrate with Dropbox, that just means that pretty much any computer that you use that has Dropbox would be your computer from the start. And I really like that option because, you know, people switch computers and tablets all the time. To have a consistent experience would be kind of neat.
Yeah, I wonder how long it will take. I mean, you think Box.net, you know, is one of the most obvious competitors to Dropbox, but there are certainly others. Dropbox has a pretty big team, a lot of talented folks working for it. This is probably something that can easily be built by a competitor. This is just Dropbox big announcement. But I really do think that they're onto something when they say people don't really think about saving files and uploading files and organizing things in folders anymore. Things happen within apps, and then you want to open that app later and have your data make sense. Now, that app might not be on the originating device, though. It might be on some other device that's using a different operating system altogether. And there was a from an article on Wired that explained how this worked. There was an executive over at Dropbox saying, yeah, Apple could, I guess, cripple this functionality if it really didn't want its users to be able to access information that originated, let's say, on an iPad, on an Android device. But that would just reflect poorly on Apple. And as this kind of technology becomes more widespread, they don't really have a choice because obviously it's really good for consumers.
And that's a strategy that always works, bullying Apple. You know, making them look bad publicly. That's a great strategy. But Ayaz made a great point, is that people have hacked this together. And it's funny how you see, you know, how you see functionality develop in this world where, you know, people have problems, they find solutions, they hack them, and then some sort of organization makes them official and does a real version of it. And now it's up to Apple and or Google on the Android side of things to say, okay, yes, we'll play nicely with this or we won't. It'll be really curious to see whether Apple, you know, brings down the hammer on Dropbox or not with this. I hope they don't, because I think it's a great, I love Dropbox. I use Dropbox personally. I think it's a great evolution of their service. So,
yeah, agreed. All right, Ayaz, let's talk a little bit more about how Hangouts have gotten better.
Yeah, so Google announced, as you mentioned, the news feeds, you're going to Make voice calls again in the desktop version of Google Hangouts and Gmail, Google Plus, and the Chrome extension. No mention of the mobile apps just yet. Like you said before, calls in the U.S. and Canada are now free from all countries where Hangouts are available, and their international rates where it's not free range from 2 cents to 15 cents per minute. That's pretty cheap. And you can have there's some changes to the voice calling. So if you did voice dialing, voice calling in the original Google Talk or Google Voice, you can only call one person. Now you can have everybody have like a big Hangout party style conference call, including videos and things like that. Sound effects if you want to have a laugh track in your conversation. And the feature is rolling out in the next couple of days. Google saying that Hangouts is designed to be the future of Google Voice, and making and receiving calls is just the beginning. Ron, is this exciting news, or am I just so excited about this because I'm really heavily invested in Google Voice?
It's funny because, you know, on the Android, you know, I'm on All About Android with Jason, and I've got a reputation now as the Google Android guy, and I read this and I just fall asleep. I just snooze. I've ignored everything about Google Hangouts from the get-go. I'm not using Google Voice, even though I really want to, but we've talked, and Jason can back me up on this. We've talked about this a lot on All About Android. Until I've got MMS support on Google Voice, it's useless to me. So I haven't fully moved to Google Voice. So I'm like, okay, great. You know, I use Skype for my VoIP dialing. Nothing, you know, it's going to take a lot to unseat that. But they sure as heck are putting a lot of effort into it. That's for sure.
That's what I was hoping when they merge Hangouts with Voice eventually, because you can send images and you can send videos and you can have all that stuff. And I'm thinking there's some way, maybe not true MMS support, but some way to get a picture from one person to the other than saying, Jason, please don't use that phone number when you're sending me an MMS. Use this phone number. Because I can't receive it with Google Voice.
Well, I mean, with the Hangouts app, you can already send pictures from one person to another. So you kind of have it. I think actually, if their plan is to merge Google Voice into Hangouts, which they say that it is, I think that almost makes it less likely that they're going to merge MMS into it. That just seems to muddy it up a little bit. They want you using the power of their service. And I think what Google thinks here is that Hangouts is perfect for the millions and millions of people that have Android devices and use Hangouts and Google Plus on the web and everything like that. They aren't really as concerned now with making Google Voice be your replacement for your phone. They want Hangouts to be your replacement for voice. You know what I mean? So they want it all in that app. They
so
get all
you guys
that
are
data.
Seeing voice pretty much being destroyed. That's really depressing.
I don't know if it's necessarily destroyed. Depends on what you define as destroyed, right? It's you still get the routing, the phone routing and the calling capabilities, but we never had MMS. So if that's not there and you get images through Hangouts anyways, is that destroying Google Voice? No, it's just different.
It sounds like
at least it's some sort of capability, right?
It's being absorbed.
Yes, it's being absorbed.
It's being classified. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
Sarah, you're a landless person, right? You don't have a landline anymore, right?
I don't.
Are you excited about something like this?
Nope. But that's not because I think this is actually really attractive. I mean, there's certain people who go like, hey, I've got Hangouts capability. Now I've got free calls to the U.S. and Canada. The international rates, at least on paper, look pretty reasonable to me. So I understand that some people are going to be like, awesome, this is a feature that got taken away. I was bummed about it. Now I've got it back. And I've got some little extras like multiple video callers and silly Google effects. Sure, that's fine. But no, this is not something I ever use. However, I do think that Google Voice merging with Hangouts is inevitable. I mean, why have two different products that do too many of similar things? So, even though I'm not using it, I think that's where it's going to go.
Yeah, and Sarah, you make a great point. And that's in line with what Google's been doing over the past 6 months to 12 months is paring down their services and reducing redundancies and focusing and showing this, you know, more of a consumer-facing effort. The problem with it is that it all relies on your network all being on Google and on Google Plus and using Hangouts. And honestly, no one in my life uses it. So therefore, it's useless to me. So, it's tough.
Well, that's too bad. I hope Voice doesn't go. Well, Voice turned is horrible compared to Grand Central. So when Hangouts replaces Voice, it'll be equally horrible. Yay.
Well, I think something we can all agree that we like to do is order food because we're all a lazy bunch of folks. This actually might be a great story then for us if we don't already have an online delivery service that works well enough. Yelp has announced the Yelp platform. They're going to work with local delivery services so that when you're browsing Yelp and you hear about this cool new Chinese food restaurant that's getting great reviews and everybody talks about how the pot stickers are super awesome, then you can go ahead and place your order from within Yelp. It's kind of like how Yelp partnered with OpenTable back in the day, so you could go ahead and reserve a table for four from within the Yelp app, although this is all about delivery. Yelp says they'll take care of all of the ordering, the checkout experience. They'll process the payments on their back end. Service is limited at the beginning. San Francisco and New York to start, obviously. Partnerships with food delivery startup Eat24 and Delivery.com is their limited rollout at this point. They'll be working with, they say, 100 local businesses. So that is quite a limited rollout. But founder and CEO Jeremy Stoppelman says, this is the staging before this platform enters new markets. Now, when it does enter new markets, then the whole thing is not just about food. Yelp says booking personal services like a spa day or a place in a yoga studio or a dentist appointment through partnerships with Booker, Demand Force, which is owned by Intuit, Mind Body. So the whole does this food delivery service thing work sounds like it's just the first step in Yelp saying, we want you to be able to go through the booking process on pretty much anything that you might otherwise just look up on Yelp. And I don't know. It seems like Yelp is being pretty bullish about all of the data that it has on people who have contributed to it over the years. 2 weeks ago, they also launched a revamped nearby feature, which sounds a lot like the direction that Foursquare is also going in, shows recommendations based on time of day. You know, if it's morning, you're probably going to get more offerings for coffee houses that are nearby. Your social graph, Ron Richards and I are Yelp friends. So I see, you know, the places that Ron likes that I might be nearby at any given time. Newly opened businesses, that can be fun. If you're like, I just want to go somewhere different. I just want to go somewhere new. Yelp will surface that stuff too. It sounds like Yelp wants to be yet again many, many things to many people rather than just a review service. But they've been going in that direction for a while. Do we think that Yelp has that brand recognition to be able to pummel other startups that do a little bit of what I just mentioned? Ron, how often do you use Yelp, would you say?
I actually use Yelp a lot. I mean, Yelp is my main kind of, okay, is this place worth going to and what do I need to know about it and that sort of thing. I find myself using the OpenTable integration a lot when I'm looking for restaurants. I already use Eat24. I used it last night, in fact, to get dinner.
Yeah.
Big Lantern from in the Mission delivers right to my house. It only took about an hour, but still, they need to work on the delivery times. That's the problem. But, integrating within Yelp, I think, you know, the idea is that they've got people coming for the reviews and for the listings, and it makes sense for Yelp to keep them there to extend with these services. And the idea of going beyond just food delivery and into other things. I mean, you could see this, you know, leveraging with Style Seat and booking your hair appointments via Yelp and like yoga appointments and all that sort of stuff. I think it's a smart move on Yelp's side as they continue to grow.
Was it really a zero-sum game, though? I mean, I ended up using OpenTable a lot more because of Yelp, and then I started just using the OpenTable app. Sometimes I found it a little easier to work with to make reservations. Then there is the option to be in Yelp all day if you wanted to. If they're going to keep integrating stuff, on Ron's point, maybe they should integrate Glimpse so you can see the person coming to your door as you're waiting for your food to be delivered. You have an hour
left. That's something that Postmates does pretty well right now. That's a food delivery app. I ordered a pizza the other night. It was pretty late. I was hungry, and I mean, I knew exactly when he was going to ring my doorbell because I could follow the courier. So yeah, that would be helpful too.
Yes, we must track all our food after we order it on our tablets.
What I think is smart here is that they're partnering with people who do these services already well, as opposed to trying to say we're going to build a delivery service. That would be a huge mistake. But by saying, okay, the people who are doing these services well, let's get them integrated, let's let them work off of our platform. That partnership angle, I think, is a smarter move on Yelp because it's less chance of things going awry. So it'll be curious to see how it works. Yeah.
It's also interesting. I think food delivery is the most obvious. It's a need that people have, and Yelp is predominantly about restaurant reviews. And of course, if all of these restaurants deliver, it's like, well, they're missing out on a huge opportunity by only allowing us to look up the experience inside a restaurant and make reservations if the restaurant could then deliver to us and Yelp is the go-between. But also, I mean, I look up Yelp sometimes. If somebody recommends a, you know, a new dentist to me, I'll just type their name in Yelp and see what other people are saying. So I think a lot of these other services, if again, this rollout of food delivery ends up going well and they feel like they can expand, that's the real key, because Yelp doesn't really just want to be about food. It's about rating places around you. So that's very interesting, interesting market to get into. And yeah, Ron, you mentioned Styleseed and their variety of other companies that do this well. Does Yelp become a competitor to them? Yelp is pretty big. I mean, they've got what, I think 10 million uniques a month just from their mobile app. So 102 million uniques per month overall. It's huge. Maybe we're going to see some partnerships.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of partnership that can make or break a startup like Eat24. I mean, you could see just a huge explosion of usage of their service, and they could really benefit from that partnership. So I think it's positive.
All right, let's take a moment to thank Umano, a really fun app for sponsoring this episode of Tech News Today. We read a lot of articles here when we put together our show, but you know, you can't always read every article that's online, certainly not. Wouldn't it be great if you could listen to those articles the same way you would an audiobook or a podcast, but not just that, you would listen to them read to you by professional voiced artists. So not just like a robot or, you know, some sort of like a built-in kind of a Siri type of voice. Umano is an app that not only discovers good articles and news stories from a variety of trusted sources, but then has them read to you by voice artists who are extremely talented. What you can do is listen whenever you feel like it, whenever it's convenient for you, if you're stuck in your car, if you're working out, if you're folding laundry at home. I mean, anything where you're like, gosh, you know, I can't really like read anything right now, but I could certainly absorb this information. You can browse a selection of topics and publishers, personalize your news preferences. If you never want news stories about music, you can filter those out. You can make playlists. Then, of course, you can share your favorite articles via email, via variety of social media, and you can download it for free on your iOS or your Android device. That ought to make Ron Richards happy. Read by professional voice artists, articles cover a large spectrum. You can filter them, make sure that you're only hearing articles that matter to you, and new articles and fresh content is added daily. Perhaps best of all, commercial free, no ads. Make those playlists, listen to them offline, and don't worry about the ads, and stay informed on the go. Download Umano for free today from the Apple App Store or via Google Play. It's spelled U-M-A-N-O, umanoapp.com. And thanks to the folks at Umano for sponsoring this episode of Tech News Today. All right, Ayaz, let's move on to a bit of a development challenge for people who do that sort of thing.
Yeah, if you like to make apps, Samsung and Intel want to give you money. They're hosting a Tizen app development challenge, and it's going to award a total of $4 million in prizes to developers. A winning app can make as much as $200,000. Developers have until November 1st to submit their apps for Tizen. Judging occurs between November 4th and the 25th. Winners are announced in December. So the top game can win $200,000. The best non-game app can win $120,000. The top top 10 HTML5-based apps can win $50,000 each. And there's only a couple of carriers right now that say they will support Tizen phones when they come out in the fourth quarter of the year. Ron, do you think $4 million, is that enough of a purse to get an operating system with some solid apps out the door in the fourth quarter?
Tizen?
Yes, Tizen.
Tizen? Yeah, Tizen. Not so much.
Well, maybe not in the state, but internationally. How about that?
Internationally, maybe. I mean, these kind of app, these app contests where they pay money for apps, they're a great way to get developers engaged and get them working with it. But really, I mean, it's not the kind of thing that makes or breaks an operating system. I mean, clearly, Tizen's got much more international footprint than it does here domestically, so it's a non-issue for us. But it is a good way to get developers engaged, but it's not the kind of thing that's going to overtake, an Android or iOS environment just by having a few games and a few apps that are built on their platform.
Yeah, that's how Android Twitter got its start, right? Google had that big developers challenge. They gave like $25,000 a piece. They had tons of apps. They had I was actually there for the G1 introduction to see Android for the first time, and they had a couple of these things like Shop Savvy. It seemed to really bolster it because you go, oh, this is a unique thing I can get. Do you think the smartphone market is just too mature to have another competitor?
Well, I honestly, I do. I mean, I think Tizen has never been one that, I mean, from the stuff I've looked at and from the stuff that it does, it's never been one where I'm like, oh, wow, this is really going to threaten what we've got going on over here. But you're right. I mean, that, you know, Google did use it for Android. How many years ago? That was 4 or 5 years ago now. And it is a way to get into developers engaged. But Tizen, it's not like Tizen's new. Tizen's been around. So, you know, this just seems like Samsung and Intel, they've got some marketing budget. It gets some attention to them. It does get developers engaged, and they see what comes out of it. But I don't think it's a game changer.
Interesting, too, that you're going to get $80,000 more if you win in the game category than in a non-game category. I mean, obviously, there's a push here to say, make an awesome game that will utilize Tizen. We'll give you $200,000 if you win. If it's a non-game app, you get $120,000. Still, it's not chump change there, but interesting that there's certainly a bit of a weight on cool games, just based on probably the market and what they think is going to make the most sense. But I agree with you, Ron. This is the sort of thing that is great for a select few developers who win and perhaps gives them more attention than they would have gotten otherwise, just being part of the challenge. But it doesn't create some sort of a gold rush of developers saying Tizen's the wave of the future.
Does either, which company has more to gain from this? If Intel gets a lot of apps for this, maybe they can power Tizen phones. But Samsung, they already have tons of Android phones, Windows phones. They also have Tizen. They have all kinds of phones. What is in it for Samsung to even bother with this?
Oh, it's got to be the partnership with Intel. It's got to be something where Intel's coming by saying, hey, we'd love to do this sort of thing. And Samsung's going, all right. And keep in mind, I have no insight into the business at NTT Docomo in Japan or Korea or all those markets. So for all I know, Tizen could be the next big thing. And in 2 years from now, we're going to talk about how great Tizen is and how it overtook Android. So I'll reserve the right to be wrong about this. But this just screams, you know, kind of marketing budget partnership and Intel and Samsung going, hey, we've got this money that we've set aside for this marketing campaign. What can we do with it? Let's do something interesting. And games are the way to get, you know, to get mass people interested in a platform. So I'm not surprised by the pricing on the game side.
All right, let's move on to an interesting feature possibly coming in the next iPhone. Hard to say, though. 9to5Mac is reporting that Apple is designing a new camera feature possibly for the 5S. Let's just go ahead and say the next iPhone will be called the 5S. For purposes of this story, called Mogul Mode. At least that's what it's being called internally. This was shared by somebody, Hamza Sood, via Twitter, which 9to5Mac has used as a source before for kind of hidden iOS code. So these are apparently hidden references inside the latest iOS 7 beta. Now, Mogul is a feature in development that would allow the iPhone to capture video at 120 frames per second. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it would be recorded at 120 frames per second, but possibly so. What's neat about 120 frames per second is it gives this very kind of floaty, almost ethereal quality to a variety of videos. This is something that actually the Galaxy S4 has 120 frames per second. It has a video capture mode, although the frame rate is not great. And some have said it's kind of gimmicky. It's not really something that you would use regularly. But yeah, I mean, this video for our video viewers, you can see that the butterfly wings are flapping obviously a lot more slowly than they would be if there was actually a butterfly in front of you. So it's very cool, depending on, of course, what you're shooting and what you're going to do with it. Now, this was discovered in iOS 7, but again, this is not necessarily going to be part of the next iPhone. Back, I think, oh gosh, in iOS 5, there was some code that related to panorama mode that we never even saw until the iPhone 5 came out because the hardware had to catch up. However, in iOS 7, because iOS 7 Beta 3 came out a couple days ago, developers now have access to 60 frames per second video recording functionality. They also have support for enhanced playback, audio recording, some other goodies. So it certainly points to, if the hardware was there, this might be something that Apple could offer and possibly say, well, other phones do it too, but ours does it better. Here's why we're superior, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, guys. When I'm looking at these videos, I'm sort of like, gosh, I mean, if I could do this via Instagram video, then all of a sudden Instagram videos might be a lot kind of more artistic and beautiful. Am I the only person who thinks 120 frames per second is awesome, or is this a gimmick?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think you know, we're continuing to see the phone evolve as a media device, and, you know, and taking photos, and then videos are really the next frontier. And so they're going to keep pushing those cameras, both the hardware and the software, to support the best quality it can, because it becomes a selling point. You know, with Instagram video and with Vine and with all that sort of stuff, and with video being easier to use on the web and upload, and especially, you know, with all the other hooks and apps that utilize video, I mean, I think it's going to become it must have factor as people look to buy phones in the future. But that said, it's a little bit of a gimmick.
I mean, panorama mode, I feel as a little bit of a gimmick too. When it works well, it's great. But I mean, how many panorama pictures are we all taking? I mean, I took one this weekend, which was the first time I've probably even tried that feature out in 6 months.
The same thing happened to me. I was actually at a baseball game in New York at the Mets game. And I was taking a picture of the stadium, and I was like, oh, hey, I have panoramic mode. And that was, I think, the first time I've used it in I can't even remember how long. You forget that it's there. And I know Android also, we also have that, Jason, what is it called?
Photosphere?
The Photosphere, yeah. I completely forgot we had Photosphere on that. These little little like photo gimmicks, you know, unless you have a platform to publish them to, they don't become a crucial part of your media creation. And so while these, you know, while panoramic stuff and the Photospheres are cool, you know, I can't easily post that to Instagram or whatever, so I don't use it. So you forget about it. But if somebody is there creating video, and with the success of Vine and the success of Instagram video, if more and more people are creating videos, they're going to want a better quality video to produce.
At this stage of the game, you have to have lots and lots of stupid little gimmicks. We've seen Samsung really push the envelope when it comes to having all kinds of weird gadgets. I can track your eyes. You can do these gestures. You can float your hand over it. Samsung's got some really cool things going for it, because otherwise all these devices are pretty much the same. And the way Apple's probably going to do something like this is spin it into, like, imagine you could slow down time. And then that's the kind of nonsensical reality distortion you're probably going to get from Apple that will probably work, because the iPhone is used as a camera all the time. I think it's a good gimmick to have. Apple's going to claim they have a great screen to watch it back. And there's always these rumors of Vimeo getting more and more integrated. If they had this kind of artsy-looking slow-mo video going directly to Vimeo, it has this perfect kind of synergy together. And you can see a bunch of people doing this. If you're going to watch 15 seconds of Instagram as well, by the way, might as well be in slow-mo.
You could speed it up, and then you'd have a six-second Vine. So there you go.
All right, let's move on to some, I don't know, I'm just going to go ahead and cross my fingers, Ayaz. It's a BlackBerry story. Is there something to be hopeful about?
No. Like yesterday. Yesterday I had Nintendo in the sixth spot. It's like the Death Watch spot, or 2 days ago. Now I've got BlackBerry in the sixth spot. It's another Death Watch kind of thing. All right, so BlackBerry had their annual meeting, and Thorsten Hines was asked if they were looking into strategic alternatives, and he says, yes, we're open to all options that create value for shareholders. He said remarks that BlackBerry was open... that BlackBerry, the company, was open to any and all licensing opportunities. He says, we're not a devices-only company. One shareholder said, my sense is that the rollout of the Z10 was a disaster. Hines' response was, will we be perfect at the launch? Probably not. Was it a disaster? I don't think so. So that's some really great words from the top of BlackBerry. And the real bad news of BlackBerry is the Wall Street Journal is reporting that there's another round of layoffs coming. The company's already cut over 5,000 jobs. They just fired their sales VP in the U.S. because of poor performance. Ron, is BlackBerry on the death watch like I was mentioning before, or is this a company on the rise?
Oh, absolutely. I feel like BlackBerry is a punchline now. And whenever I see a BlackBerry, like either an ad or a new announcement or, God forbid, one in the wild, I just laugh. I mean, I feel like you know, Android and iPhone just kind of blew right past them. And now, and once the corporate support of BlackBerry got broken down and corporate IT departments started allowing Android and iPhone phones, it became kind of game over. So I think BlackBerry is slowly going down the drain.
You know, I think what we might see here is a very drastic, if BlackBerry can survive, devices are out of there. Licensing strategies. Let's hope that BlackBerry can lock up some good licensing deals. They're still going to have to fire a lot of people. They're going to have to get rid of some executives that they simply don't need for areas that aren't working. Rollout of the Z10 in the U.S., a disaster. Well, you know, BlackBerry's had too many of those disasters. If it can reinvent itself as a much slimmer, leaner company that that can provide that sort of secure, private offering, particularly to enterprises, it can still remain a company. But that's not without a lot of people falling by the wayside. The hardware business is not working. And I mean, this time last year, I mean, remember the whole march up to new BlackBerry devices and BlackBerry 10, and it was delayed like a million years. And we all thought, this is ridiculous. How much can all this stuff be delayed? But maybe it'll just be so awesome that BlackBerry will come surging back. That didn't happen.
That just sounds like what everybody said about Palm. It's like, oh, the phone's coming out. It'll be great, and we'll wait. And it came out, and oh, it's really good. It really is good. And then it kind of annoyed some of its core fans as well. A portfolio manager over at McNichol & Associates said about Hines, he's talking about partnerships and being open to talks. And I don't think you say that unless you've had a talk or two with interested parties. And that gives you some confidence. That is the most optimistic analyst I've ever seen. It's like, well, he must be talking to people. They must have a deal in place. Or not.
I'll make a crazy prediction for that analyst. I will say that BlackBerry will get bought by HP.
Well, that manager, by the way, that McNichol & Associates owns shares of BlackBerry, so you got to take their word with a grain of salt there. But yeah, you think HP? I think Dell would buy BlackBerry first. I've been saying that for years now because they both don't kind of work well, so you put them together.
And that's
maybe what we ought to do
success.
Is just go ahead and melt all of our BlackBerry devices. Apparently, you can do that now and then print them back out better in a 3D printer. That's our randomizer.
Nice.
So smooth.
Did you like that one?
Yeah, that was
like a liquid metal.
I wasn't even sure whether to push the button.
Ayaz, tell us more about this Terminator 2-esque technology.
No, I won't. No. So Michael Dickey at North Carolina State University in Raleigh has found a way, at least the folks at North Carolina, have found a way to effectively print 3D metallic objects. It uses an alloy of metals, gallium and indium, which are both non-toxic. It's liquid at room temperature and forms a thin skin when it's exposed to air. So when you pour this out of a syringe, that's what the researchers are doing in this video.
They're like buckyballs.
Exactly. So as they're being like pumped out of the syringe, they are forming a structure that can support itself because there's a thin skin over this metal. And this could allow for bendable electronics because you can put this alloy inside of a rubber like a tube, which would allow you to have a lot of circuitry that could be bendable. So that's kind of interesting. And the researchers are saying that this could also be put into a 3D printer. So instead of a syringe, you have a little inkjet kind of deal. It'll spray out this metal, and you can make metal pieces using a printer. It looks really awesome. It looked like mercury to me, which scared me.
Yeah.
But then it's they say it's non-toxic, and it won't give you like all kinds of damage. Ron, are you going to print
like,
out anything?
Is this going to be like, you know, when Texas Instrument calculators were allowed into math classes? It's like, we don't really have to solder anything, you know, in the next 10 years because our 3D printers can just spit out something a lot more beautiful than whatever we'd have been putting together longhand. Kind of reminds me of that.
3D printers freak me out. I'll just say it. The whole thing. and this is not helping at all.
You don't want to print things?
I might have hit my generation gap now with the 3D printer and using alloy metals within it, and that's crazy, but it's awesome too. So it's the future.
But instead of like, you know, printing out like a 3D mold of a car part, like just print the part with this kind of thing. I'd be like, all right. Well, assuming it can withstand all kinds of damage, I don't know if it can.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the calendar.
Shall I talk about the calendar? The Apple App Store turned 5 years old today. They get to keep the name thanks to that lawsuit. It launched with more than 500 apps. That's a small number, isn't it? Back with the iPhone 3G. Tomorrow, Netflix's original series, Orange is the New Black, will debut on July 11th. Nokia is holding its Zoom Reinvented event in New York City tomorrow. Everyone's expecting a Nokia Lumia with a 41-megapixel camera. And on August 9th, Google Latitude is taking a dirt nap because Google is killing Latitude. Sorry,
you know, killing latitude, but a lot of the features of latitude, I think, are rolled in or rolling into G+, as they are wont to do.
It's kind of like getting the way absorbed. Wave went into docs. Yep. It's gonna, but yeah, then that's the calendar.
Let's like see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a voicemail from Steve, who's got some bad news about the Hulu desktop.
Hey, crew. On Monday morning's program, you all speculated on what might happen to the Hulu desktop app if Hulu gets a new owner in the near future. I hate to break it to you guys, but the Hulu desktop app has been defunct for at least the last 2 weeks. It was taken down off the website. In fact, the entire Hulu Labs section of the website has disappeared as well. There's no telling whether this has anything to do with Hulu being up for sale, but I used the desktop app and I liked it, and anybody who wants it now is going to have to get a copy from somebody who managed to download it before it disappeared.
Well, Steve,
wow,
that's
I didn't notice that because I never actually used Hulu via the desktop.
I remember using the desktop app right when it came out and thinking it was awesome and then not using it ever again because I just got an app or stopped using Hulu.
So. I'm the guy with the Media Center PC attached to the TV, so I used it all the time. I still do.
It still works.
It still works, but I'm really surprised that Hulu Labs is gone. I thought that was a really cool thing with like facial recognition.
So it's not as if it doesn't work. It's just not available for new customers.
Right.
It's probably going to exist on all those websites. You can probably find it somewhere. But I'm not surprised that Labs went away, especially if they're talking about acquisition or something like that. I imagine they're probably pulling that stuff in internal because they don't want to introduce anything new or make anything changes. Typically before a sale, things go very status quo and very quiet. So it makes sense to take Labs down. So I'm not surprised by that.
Got another email from Peter Wells. He called in to tell us how music streaming affects data caps down under in Australia.
Here in Australia, just following up on the Mog AT&T story that you did yesterday. Mog has had a very similar deal in place with Telstra in Australia for about 6 months now. And the deal there is that if you use Mog to stream over Telstra, then you don't get any of that charged against your data cap. So I would imagine that AT&T will do a very similar thing. And AT&T and Telstra are very similar, you know, in terms of market share and overall size and probably evilness as well. But I still haven't seen this make a huge impact on Mog. Everyone I know still uses Pandora or Spotify. Anyway, I love the show.
All right. Well, thanks to Peter and Steve for those voicemails. And thanks to Ron Richards for being our guest today. Ron, besides All About Android, which, of course, you host along with Jason Howell and Gina Trapani, where else can people find your work online and what you're up to?
Yeah, so always go watch All About Android every Tuesday. We have a blast doing it. But you can find me at about.me/RonXO. Got links to my Twitter, Facebook, Google+, all that fun stuff there. And by day, I work for Image Comics. So go to imagecomics.com, the new and improved Image Comics website, where we're offering DRM-free digital comics for download. So check it out.
All right. And thanks to everybody who participated in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, where you can vote up and down stories or submit stories you want us to talk about. Tomorrow, we've got Shannon Morse, Twit's own Shannon Morse from Before You Buy, Threatwire, all sorts of good stuff. In the meantime, you can write us at tnt@twit.tv. You can call us at 260-TNT-SHOW, and we'll see you tomorrow.